This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, I want to welcome you in to Sports Map Radio Network and the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us over the next 2 hours at eRadio Sports, info at eradiosports.com and podcastarena.com. What a Saturday we have coming your way over the next 2 hours. We're going to hit on some NBA news and notes. Our very special guest, legendary NBA coach Mike Dunleavy, will be with us. Also, some college football talk. It is week 8 of the college football season, but did you know it's week 1 for the Big Ten Conference? And so Brian is going to help us break it all down. And as always, some PGA news and notes. A very special guest that will be with us from Decade Golf. He is the founder, and that is Scott Fawcett. Always love to pot up the mic and visit with my producer, and that is Jack McCraw. Give him a follow, Jack MC at 15. And Jack, we're still in recovery mode from our Dallas Cowboys. I mean, do you think Dallas still has what it takes to turn it around despite a 2-4 record?
Believe it or not, Alyssa, yes, I do, for one simple reason. They are 2-4 right now, but they are still in first place in the NFC East.
Yeah, it's crazy. So there's been a lot that's happened. Obviously, the injury with Dak Prescott, but what are your takeaways from watching Andy Dalton and what he had his first start with the Cowboys? I mean, they were blown out by the Cardinals 38-10.
Oh, boy, he looks stiff. He looked like he couldn't move out of the pocket. And this is the same quarterback who, he wasn't a very mobile quarterback in Cincinnati, but he at least got the job done. And this is the best team he's probably been on as far as receiver-wise, with guys like CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, and Amari Cooper. So he should just be chunking the ball to them, let alone this is the best running back he's ever played with Ezekiel Elliott. And Ezekiel Elliott had himself a horrible game.
Well, the Cowboys are struggling mightily, and there's been a lot of talk. It's been in the news all week. The Cowboys, I mean, did they make a mistake by hiring Mike McCarthy?
I don't know if it's a mistake because it's still too early to decide, but the offensive play calling has been atrocious. And the defense, Mike Norvell, I don't know what's going on in your head, but that is some of the worst defensive play calling I've ever seen. And I've been watching football for about 13 years, Big E.
Well, you talk about defense, but what do you think overall is just the biggest issue in Dallas?
Defense is an issue, but also I would say their injuries to their offensive line. Tyrone Smith has missed a couple games. When Travis Frederick retired, that's a big hole that they couldn't fill up. Lyle Collins is hurting, and Zach Martin now looks like he could be hurt as well.
The NFL conversation is going to continue. Sports Map Radio Network. Come on back to the Big E Sports Show.
Is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Alyssa Walker Campbell back with you on this Saturday morning at Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com. Connect with us on social media. We always love to hear from you at eRadio Sports. Send us an email. We love to hear from our listening base. Info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. Superstar batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts are designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Get dependable power and performance from a superstar battery for your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, boat, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today, and their professional parts people can help you find just the exact battery for your vehicle. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, in our next segment, we're going to go around the horn. We're going to talk some baseball and shine the spotlight on a very special book review. It is titled Dalco, The Untold Story of Baseball's Fastest Pitcher. Co-author Brian Vicondre is our very special guest, and we're so delighted to have him on the program for the very first time. Good morning, Brian.
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much for having us and giving us the opportunity to talk about the legend of Dalkowski.
Well, we're looking forward to taking a deep dive into your book, but first and foremost, today is Game 4 of the World Series, and I just wanted to get your takeaways from watching the series between the Dodgers and the Rays. I mean, what are some of your takeaways?
Pitching is the name of the game, isn't it? It really comes down to the simple things of pitching and defense. That's what I always take away from it. That's why I've been a pitching coach for 40-some years.
Well, I tell you, you know, I was talking with my producer before we started today's interview, and I have to wonder when we talk about the Dodgers, I mean, here one of the all-time great, very special players. Does Clayton Kershaw, does he need to win a World Series to secure his legacy? I mean, he has in years past, I mean, has struggled in October.
It's true, and I would arrogate that responsibility to his coaches and managerial staff. When you look at the ability that Kershaw has taken to the hill and what he has executed generally during the first six innings of what goes on out there, they ask him to go out and do something that he is not prepared to do. Whether it is mentally he has drained himself by the sixth inning, I can't give you the answer. I've never spoken to Clayton about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in that first game, he went six strong innings and was able to provide them with the W, wasn't he?
This is the best that perhaps you have seen him in the postseason. I mean, you're talking about he's a future Hall of Famer.
No doubt that he's a future Hall of Famer. And again, I look at how you prepare a pitcher for what's going on in a particular situation. If I'm managing somebody like Clayton, I say, I'm asking you for five. That's it. So he has a start point and an end point. He knows what to focus on and what's going on. It's not open-ended to see how far he can go. We've seen too many people fail that way. Pedro Martinez is a great example of that as well. So I would give him things that he could focus on. Understand that that's it, and that it's my job as the manager to have somebody ready for the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth inning if that's what we're going to do. And we haven't seen that. When Roberts has had that opportunity, it hasn't worked out well for him or the team or for Clayton.
So glad you're with us this morning at SportsMap Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com. Our very special guest, author of Dalco, The Untold Story of Baseball's Fastest Pitcher. We're looking forward to talking about his brand new book that he co-authored. We're visiting with pitching guru Brian Vikander. And, you know, three appearances in 4 years. I mean, so how much pressure do you think the Dodgers are under to win and to snap this drought? I mean, they got to get it done, right?
They absolutely do. It's no different than the Lakers situation.
Uh-huh.
and LeBron coming to town. Last year was an absolute disaster. They want to arrogate total responsibility to LeBron. It was hardly fair to do that. But he did take another, and I'm not saying that this is the Showtime Lakers or the 1950s, 60s Celtics or Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls. But he knows how to win, and he put the team together, and they got the job done. The Dodgers have got to do the same thing. They're laden with talent. They have all the tools, and it comes down to somebody taking that little bit extra and making it happen for them. They've got to do it.
You're listening to The Voice, Brian Vikander, co-author of Dalco, The Untold Story of Baseball's Fastest Pitcher. We wanted to kind of get your pulse on this series, but let's move ahead and let's shine the spotlight on your brand new book. When our listeners open it up, what are they going to find?
Several things they're going to find immediately. We are talking about and addressing the last great American sports legend. This tale has never been told before. Think about where you're going to find another thing with that radiates like that. We've transformed Steve Dalkowski into a human subject, not an object. People were always interested in Dalkowski for the stories, but never the person. He was exploited, he was abused, he was lied about for years. We finally distilled the truth out of all the myths, the lies, and exaggerations that existed around this guy who threw legendary heat. We moved ever closer to proving the accuracy of he was the fastest ever. And we've created now a fluid and ongoing forum with our website, dalcobook.com, where we can continue to add to the tradition and legacy of Steve Dalkowski.
Steve Dalkowski died in April at the age of 80, the fastest pitcher in baseball history. Why was he a career minor leaguer? Why did he never make it to the majors?
He never made it to the major leagues because he had mental problems. Now, I'm not talking he was a mental defective, Alyssa. Don't misunderstand me. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But he never had the ability to get over the things that forced him into problem situations. He was constantly told that he was the fastest pitcher of all time. He was expected to strike everybody out, and he was wild. And these ghosts followed him to the hill every time he went out there, and he wrestled with them. If he did well, he didn't know why. If he did poorly, he didn't know why. And there was no one around him, while everyone tried diligently to help him as best they could, there was nobody around him who could understand mechanically, through the kinematic sequencing or the mental skills that were necessary to help distill it down and make it easy for him to understand what he needed to do on the mound. He didn't need to strike everybody out, Alyssa.
Brian, when you did your research for this book, who did you interview?
I had the opportunity to interview a lot of people that most players and individuals following the game will never have heard of. These were career minor leaguers, guys that had cups of coffee in the major leagues. These were guys, for the most part, that didn't have a big major league career. And they were so excited to be able to talk about baseball. They were so excited that somebody remembered who they were and had the opportunity to share opportunities about what it was like to face Dalkowski. But starting with Sudden Sam McDowell, who is a legendary left-handed pitcher, one of the hardest throwers of all time. He was the guy who was able to say to me, Brian, I threw hard. I was in the 100-mile-an-hour club. I'm always talked about as one of the hardest throwers of all time. Dalkowski threw harder than I did. So that's an impressive statement, mm-hmm. Alyssa. That's an impressive statement.
Why is there no video on Dalko?
Boy, you've hit the holy grail on the head. I can't figure that one out for the life of me. Everybody who went to spring training was filmed at some point in time. That the fastest pitcher of all time never got video is mm-hmm. absolutely stunning. It's hard to believe. And we always have the feeling that somewhere, someplace, in some little town, somebody did take some video of Dalkowski, and it went into some sort of a tin in a garage. Nobody knew what it was. It'll end up getting thrown out. But it's unimaginable that the biggest arm of all time never got film.
And as I understand, for Steve Dalkowski, at the end of his life, it did not end well. He spent the last 26 years in a nursing home. And he really, how would you summarize? I mean, is he one of the greatest what-ifs in baseball history?
There's no doubt about that. And he had once he left professional baseball in about 1965, he really didn't have anything to go back to. He didn't have a lot of interest outside the game itself. He didn't have distractions other than drinking, and he got into drinking in a big way once he left the game. There's some question about how much he drank when he was in the game. He drank, there's no doubt about that. Had a lot of free time in baseball. But after that, he drank a lot harder, and he had alcohol-induced dementia when they finally got him back to New Britain, and he lived in the same room for the last 30-plus years until he passed away at 80 this past April.
Co-author of Dalko, The Untold Story of Baseball's Fastest Pitcher, Brian Vikander, has been our very special guest. You can go anywhere online and pick up a copy of his brand new book. And Brian, we're just out of time. What a great way to kick off hour two. Let's extend this conversation and have you back right before the holidays, okay?
Love to do that. Alyssa, thanks to you and your audience. Have a fine day.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way here at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and at O'Reilly Auto Parts, they will help make your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects easier. So when your car isn't stopping like it used to, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Well, here we go. It is week 8 of the college football season, and right now we're going to focus our attention on the ACC. North Carolina is the 14th ranked team in the country, and today the Tar Heels, they actually start a 4-week stretch of rivalry games and will face 23rd ranked NC State at 12 o'clock Eastern Time on ESPN. We are so delighted to have back with us this morning. He's carving out some time, offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach for the Tar Heels, and that is Coach Phil Longo. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to catch up with you, and just what a season it has been for the Tar Heels. We're looking forward to breaking it all down. And, you know, before we look ahead and preview this afternoon's matchup, you've had a chance to digest the game against Florida State. Just give us your takeaways and what happened in that first half.
Oh, Florida State was a battle. We knew it was going to be a battle going in. You know, and the team that played cleaner football was probably going to give themselves you know, an opportunity to go into the second half with a really good foundation. And, you know, we had our miscues in the first half, and I thought our team showed a lot of character. We got on track in the second half, and we battled back, and we gave ourselves, you know, at least an opportunity to fight to win the ball game, you know, at the end in the fourth quarter. And, you know, you'd like to start a game off not creating so many obstacles for yourself. That's not how it went against Florida State. And, you know, so you learn from that kind of experience, and it's led to a great week of preparation for today's game.
Well, North Carolina suffered its first loss of the season despite, as you're talking about, just a furious comeback against Florida State last Saturday night. I am curious, I mean, what was the message at halftime? Because UNC outscored the Seminoles, what, 21-0 in the second half, and had a chance to force overtime and even win in that final minute of the game.
Well, you know, Coach Brown has seen and been a part of just about every situation that you can experience in the world of college football. And, you know, he just systematically went through what needs to be done in the second half to get ourselves back into it. And it really was a one play at a time approach. Plays turn into drives, drives turn into points, drives turn into stops on defense, and you inch your way back into it. Had we come back and actually won that game, it would have been one of the biggest comebacks in North Carolina history. And we did a good job of getting ourselves to a point where we could compete to try to win at the end. And so, you know, when Coach addresses the team and the staff, you know, we all listen because we know he's been there and he's done it. And he has the blueprint for just about every situation. So that was the approach. And, you know, building on that game and being prepared for today was the approach this week, and I think we're prepared for the game this afternoon.
The offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at UNC, Phil Longo, is our very special guest. It's great to hear you talk about just how proud you were of your players and how they battled back in that game. They played with a lot of pride. They did not quit. So take us through practice this week. I mean, what was the biggest issue, let's say, offensively that needed to be addressed?
Well, you look at the film. I mean, we looked at the overall production. The points were good in the second half. Yardage wise, we know we're just under 600 yards of offense. So you would think we want to finish drives a little bit better than we did in that game. You address the mistakes on Sunday, and then you put that game behind you. So from Monday on, it's the total focus has been North Carolina State and it's a good football team, and they needed our focus. And so we've got a good week of prep going into this afternoon's game.
Okay, so one of the reasons why the Tar Heels, you guys have been one of the top teams in the country, is because of your, what, sophomore quarterback in Sam Howell. So what has he shown you so far this season?
Well, you know, I think Sam has done a phenomenal job in the offseason of, and we talked about this last time I was on the show, of addressing things that we and he felt like he wanted to get better at between years one and two. So now the biggest difference is I think he has a greater leadership role on the team, particularly offensively. And I think, you know, he returns this year, you know, as a 13-game veteran in the ACC as opposed to last year where he was learning on the run and playing as a true freshman. So we've got a veteran quarterback with a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge of the game, and has some situations now where he's got more of a feel of been there, done that, then, you know, hey, what's this game going to be like? And that's probably the biggest difference, you know, in his maturation and his development going into the second season.
So what's your message to him as far as what is the focus for today?
You know, it's interesting. I give him the same advice just about all the time. He knows what he's
Do
doing.
Do you really? Okay.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing mentally. You know, he'll prep himself during the week. He'll know this thing like a coach will. And then athletically, his talent base doesn't change from week to week. So he's using the same weapons, his arm and his feet and his intelligence and knowledge of the game and knowledge of the offense. So that stuff doesn't really change from week to week. The biggest deal is to be able to go from one play to the next, treating every single play as its own little world. You know, and, you know, offensively, we'd say don't blink all the time. And a lot of that has to do with recruiting and how fast we play and the tempo and all that. But the biggest meaning Don't Blink has for us on the football end of it positionally is we don't want the success of the last play really to affect the next one. You don't want to be overconfident now because, we've got a 14-point lead. We can sit tight. You don't want that. You also don't want a bad play on the previous rep to affect the next play because then it affects execution. So just – and that's my advice. Hey, listen, take each play – as its own play, ID what the defense is doing, and take what they give you. And I think when he does that, he puts together his best games. And I probably would apply that to just about any position. But at quarterback, it's absolutely vital that he stays poised, which he is, wins mentally pre-snap, and then just executes athletically post-snap.
You're listening to The Voice, the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach for UNC, Phil Longo. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Coach Phil Longo. So let's just step back for a moment. I mean, what are the expectations for the Tar Heels this year? You were just, you know, giving high praise for your head coach, Mack Brown. He's done such a remarkable job in such a short period of time, and the expectations do continue to rise. I mean, how have they become, like, as we're talking about, they're one of the top teams in the country.
I think when you build a program, offensively, defensively, special teams, the entire program, you know, and as much as this sounds like coach speak, you want to build a really good foundation. And that way, when you have to fall back on your base plays, your base calls, the base techniques and things that we do every day, they're really sound and you know, they're solid and they make sense from an X's and O's standpoint. The technique is effective. So I think that's what we tried to do last year, was build a really good foundation. We played in every game. We were in every single game, just about every game that we played. Unless we ran away with it, every game we played came down to the second aspect of the second half of the fourth quarter. And really, there's been some a game or two this year that we've been in control of. Until the Florida State game, we had not led in a ball game. And so it was good to see us respond when we were behind. But I think our goal right now is to play one play at a time, chip away, and let the score take care of itself at the end of the game. And, you know, if we prepare well during the week, I think we feel like we have a chance to compete in every game we play this season.
Okay, this afternoon you're going to face NC State. Obviously, as I mentioned, a heated rivalry. This is a team that has, what, won three in a row. So what is the message to the team as you guys get ready to get after it?
Well, you know, rivalry games can be emotional. They can be heated. I think the one added ingredient maybe is to maintain your poise and control and not do anything that's going to give some free yardage to the opponent. But really, I mean, after that, it really comes down to securing the football. And you want to create turnovers on defense and protect the football on offense. You want to get off to a really good start. It's going to be a very, very physical competition today because of the nature of the rivalry. And I think the team that makes the fewer mistakes gives themselves the best opportunity to win the ballgame.
The offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach Phil Longo, our special guest, UNC. We're talking about it. And let's just step back, too, and talk about just how challenging this year has been. I mean, COVID-19 has diminished the atmosphere of college football games. You've got limited fan capacities. We've talked about it on my program before. I mean, how tough has this been for the players and for the coaches to play social distance football?
Well, it's been interesting. I don't know if we'll ever have a year as tumultuous as this year, but we have tried to address it the same way we're coaching our players. I mean, every day you get up and, you know, football coaches are very regimented. We want the schedule to be what it is. It's a sport of deadlines. You know, you have to have red zone offense done by a certain day. You got to have short yardage done by a certain day. You have to have your technique completed, your drills completed in 5 minutes, because in 5 minutes we're moving to the next drill. Everything is very regimented. It's a sport of deadlines. So when all of a sudden you have a pandemic and you don't even know when you're playing, when you're practicing, how long you're practicing for, can't practice in the same manner anymore because of the, you know, the mass and the distancing and all that other stuff. It just makes every single day its own game of its own. And so we've really gotten together, met on the day. What are the obstacles of today? Recruiting rules change every day now. And so does how and when we can practice. So you just kind of build the strategy for the day and make the most and get the most out of what you can do with your players and your program. You know, and you stack them up, and hopefully by the end of the week, if God willing, you are playing on Saturday, we're prepared to get after it. So it's different. It's not the choice. It's not what we want, but it's what we have. So we're going to make
it. It is unprecedented, and it is week 8 of the college football season. Looking forward to North Carolina as they get set to face the 23rd ranked NC State at 12 o'clock Eastern Time on ESPN. Phil, always a true pleasure. You stay safe, and we'll catch up with you again real soon. Thank you so much.
is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, so glad you're with us on this Saturday morning. You are listening to Sports Map Radio Network and the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect. We would love to hear from you. Always live on Twitter at eRadio Sports, info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com, and Superstar Batteries, exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts, are designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Get dependable power and performance from a Superstar battery for your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, boat, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts, and their professional parts people can help you find just the exact battery for your vehicle. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Hey, we always love to tee it up and talk some PGA news and notes. And also, we love to take time for a golf lesson. So we're going to do that in our next segment. Delighted to have with us the creator of Decade Golf. He played college golf at Texas A&M, had a professional golf career, and his journey eventually led him to creating a new strategy to help all of us take our own game to the next level. It is such an honor to have with us this morning at Sports Map Radio Network, and that is Scott Fawcett of Decade Golf. Good morning, Scott.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It should be fun to have a conversation.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's a true pleasure to have you on with us. I tell you, my youngest son and I, we had the opportunity to listen to you in the month of July at Blackhawk Country Club, where you hosted a seminar, and I just thought, listening to you, I mean, there was so much fascinating information that you shared on a revolutionary way to approach the game. So I thought, you know what, we've got to get him on the show. So before we highlight Decade Course Management and the system, why don't you take time to share with our listeners just a little bit about as far as your background. And I mentioned that you played college golf at Texas A&M, those good old days when you guys were in the Big 12 Conference with us.
That's right. You were in the Southwest Conference when I was there.
Okay.
In the mid-90s.
Uh-huh.
It's funny because my roommate actually won the last Southwest Conference championship. But, yeah, you know, I played golf at Texas A&M. I've got finance and economics degrees. I've kind of been a math nerd my whole life. And just a combination of playing a lot of poker and professional golf and kind of having a mind for math and logic just led me to realize that I could combine all of the TrackMan shot pattern data and link it up with the new strokes gained statistics back in 2014. And, you know, I was really just trying to work on my own game to try to win U.S. Mid-Am, and I wound up having an injury. So I caddied for Will Zalatoris here in Texas when he won the 2014 Texas Amateur and then the U.S. Junior also that summer. And obviously he just finished sixth in the U.S. Open and has had quite a string now that he's turned professional and has earned a PGA Tour card. And, you know, it's just it's been fun kind of combining two accidental, I don't want to say passions, but quasi-passions of math and logic and golf, and really accidentally creating something that the timing was just perfect for to be helping a lot of these young players you're seeing out on the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour, and been a lot of fun to just help people shoot lower scores and maintain their sanity a little bit better.
The founder of Decade Golf, Scott Fawcett, is our very special guest this morning at Sports Map Radio Network. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Scott Fawcett. And, you know, I have to wonder, there's got to be times when you reflect on your own golf career. You were just talking about playing professionally and with the Hooters Tour and some of the other random mini tours. But if you could, you know, give your younger self some advice, or if you could pen a letter to yourself, I mean, what advice would you give? And perhaps what would you do differently, Scott?
You know, it's a paradox that golf is so hard that you have to play it correctly, which actually makes it easy, and easy being in a relative sense. But I just, you know, when you're pretty good at golf, which I was, you start feeling like you can do anything with any shot. And, you know, you wind up trying to force birdies in all kinds of, you know, crazy situations, and you'll see little hallways through trees or whatever. And really, the idea that par is just never a bad score, even at the professional level, is just it's an interesting thing to actually try to digest and trust. And then you're really just playing with patience and discipline, waiting out a good string of par fives and then trying your hardest not to give it back on the par threes and fours. And when you do that correctly, you know, every single week, you'll have a couple weeks a year where it works out. And, you know, the golf is the largest outdoor sport played with the ball in the air, the longest of any sport in the world. Even if you were perfect at ball striking and could control everything perfectly, subtle variances in wind still would make your shot patterns effectively massive.
Uh-huh.
And that's people don't realize, just, you know, on the PGA Tour, you know, Bryson's shot pattern. I went back and analyzed the entire thing at the U.S. Open. Bryson's shot pattern was over 70 yards wide. And people think, gosh, that, see, he doesn't know where it's going. Actually, that was one of the tightest shot patterns of anyone, even the guys bunting it up there. So shot patterns are simply massive, and understanding that relative to your targets basically forces you to play with, you know, air quotes, correct strategy. And once you do that, the game's really just not that difficult.
So, Scott, pull back the curtain and just share the inspiration on this golf management system decade. And tell our listeners, you know, connect with them. Where can they go and find out more about the app? And, you know, once they sign up, I mean, how quickly can they see some results?
You know, I hate saying it. You sound like a snake oil salesman, especially in golf, promising overnight success. But it really is overnight success. You really would be amazed. That we're still doing it right now, giving away one free month of our Foundations app, and the amount of positive feedback we gave away over 1,000 accounts, and the amount of positive feedback coming into people like, wow, just from the free month, you know, I've shot my personal best, or I hit 15 greens in regulation, which I've never done before, or whatever it is. Just understanding at least a glimpse of proper strategy and psychology really essentially can help you basically overnight. And, you know, the genesis of it, like I say, I had created this for my own game, and then I had an injury, so I wound up caddying for Will Zalatoris when he won the Texas Amateur. And about six holes into it, I was thinking to myself, like, this is ridiculous. I know I can, you know, it's a math-based system, so I was doing a lot of math in my head and then giving him this optimized target. And even I was sitting there thinking, like, this is ridiculous. I know this kid can get more aggressive than this, because I wasn't the one playing and having the emotion of trying to win a tournament. I was just trying to help a buddy out. We're even, and then one under, and next thing you know, we shoot 67 in the first round, and I'm like, wow, that was pretty much the easiest 67 I've ever seen. If I had been playing, I would have been on about number seven, and I would have pitched it in the trash and thought, this is stupid. I can definitely play more aggressively than this. That was a total waste of time. But since I was, again, removing the emotion of actually hitting the shots and worrying about outcome, I'm just trying to, you know, to play Will like a video game. It was just unbelievable to watch how simple winning, you know, the Texas Am, which is a solid golf tournament, just how easy it was. And then, honestly, replicating it at the U.S. Junior, I mean, it was just the easiest thing ever. And then, obviously, since Bryson attended SMU, the SMU coach hooked me up with him back in 2015. And watching him go from 60th in the world as an amateur to 3 months later win the NCAA championship, and 3 months later winning the U.S. amateur, it's just the process is repeated so often. It's crazy, and it's really just because young players don't have a prefrontal cortex. It's not that they're dumb. They simply are incapable of making good decisions. So systematizing their decision-making process just makes all of it so much easier, both mentally and emotionally, like you can't even imagine.
Okay, so Scott, you've mentioned several times Will Zalatoris. You have been his mentor, his caddy, his coach. You know, I listen to PGA Tour SiriusXM radio, and they're always talking about this guy. This is a guy you got to keep your eye on. I mean, what does the future hold for him? Because he's one of the most consistent players right now.
I mean, this guy really is the limit. We've always known he's one of the best ball strikers in the world, and his putting's getting really solid, and I mean, nobody believes in him. I mean, when he finished sixth at the U.S. Open, I sent him a text basically. It was like, nobody believes in you more than me, and even I'm blown away at what he's done. I mean, he had 12 straight top 20 finishes on the Korn Ferry Tour leading into the U.S. Open, which is a record. And when you go into the U.S. Open kind of as the man, but from the Korn Ferry Tour, it's pretty hard to go out there and back that up on that stage. And to just go out there and finish sixth and make a $500,000, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And then, you know, he's had two more top tens on the PGA Tour since then. It's just incredible. And the sky really is the limit, because he is the best ball striker I've ever seen. And there's just going to be, you know, a few times a year that all of that's going to magically line up and you're just going to win golf tournaments. It will be fun to watch him for 15 to 20 years do some great things out there.
Scott, tell us a little bit about, as far as your relationship with Bryson DeChambeau. You said the SMU coach introduced you guys back in 2015, because he's obviously what endorsed your system, and it's worked well for him.
Sure. You know, Bryson's a guy that he's a smart dude, and when he won the U.S. Amateur, you know, my wife was like, it's got to be a great thing, doesn't it? I'm like, well, I can see people being intimidated by it. Well, yeah, it's a math-based system, and Bryson the genius. used it, you know, that's not for me. And it really is, the system at the end of the day is as easy as, you know, 6+2. And so a guy like Bryson, who, when I did my seminar at SMU, I used to always ask the best players in the room, you know, where do you currently aim your approach shots? And the majority of guys would be like, I don't know. And Bryson immediately answered at the flag. And I was like, wow, you had an answer. It's a terrible one, but you had an answer, which is shocking. He's like, you know, I just figured that if it's going to be my week a couple of times a year, that I need to be playing aggressively and trying to get the most out of it. And that's, again, the exact mindset I had when I was, you know, about his caliber of player at 21. And it's just, you just don't have that much control over the golf ball. And so just getting a guy like that to realize, you know, it's not middle of the green. Middle of the green is too conservative. And the fact that the only sport in the world that's on court, it's really hard to actually give generic playing lesson advice. So you really do need a system. And then once you take, again, a kid like Bryson, who's got all the talent in the world, and give him a system for making, you know, optimal decisions around a golf course, again, the sky really is the limit. And it's, again, it's just something that's been repeated so often with, you know, I've had probably 6 or 7 players win the U.S. Amateur and the men's and women's in the last few years, and majors on both tours. And it's just fun to, you know, it's not just men. Sophia Popov, she referred to decade when she won the British Open this summer. And It's just fun to watch people kind of come from out of nowhere. And again, so many people that are younger, it's just hard to learn how to play this game because you just don't get good feedback. If I'm working on my serve in tennis, I know that was in or out. I get good feedback. In golf, you really don't. You never see the same situation twice. So it's just a really hard game to learn to play correctly if you ever learn. Like I would say in my 20s, I never learned how to play correctly. And it's probably the main reason I didn't make it. I mean, I won 10 times on every tour except for the one you want to win on around the world.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a really, really difficult game to learn how to play well. But then again, to just remove the emotion from the decision-making process, it just makes the game, I mean, more fun, easier, scores go down, everything about it, it just gets easier.
He is changing the landscape of competitive golf. We are visiting with founder of Decade Golf, Scott Fawcett. We've got to step aside for a quick break, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin the founder of Decade Golf, Scott Fawcett. Golf strategist, he is changing the landscape of competitive golf, the founder of Decade Golf. Give him a follow on Twitter at Scott Fawcett. And, you know, I mentioned here we are talking about Bryson DeChambeau, certainly one of the biggest storylines right now in golf. And we have witnessed just this physical transformation that has taken place. So why do you think there has been such resistance with embracing his new approach?
I don't know. I really don't get it. And it's funny to me to listen to guys like Nicklaus make comments like, well, gee, Jack, when you were winning every single major or finishing second, you were doing relatively the exact same thing to golf courses Bryson is. Why was it okay for you, but now it's a problem? I mean, and the same thing to Tiger to a certain extent. That's how he won the Masters originally. It's how he won Pebble Beach by 15. He was just decimating the golf course with length. And I think that the main thing that was missed with Tiger is everybody looked at his workouts and mistook brute strength for physical fitness, for cardio fitness. And Bryson has come along and shown now, like, no, it's just brute strength. And, you know, this is one thing that I think people will get wrong is they're going to try to force this overnight, thinking that Bryson has done this overnight. I mean, he and Como have been working on this for almost 2 years now. Now, when you take a 6-month break in the middle of it and he comes back, you know, 15, 20 pounds heavier, it looks like it was overnight. But this has been a long-term process, and, you know, it's one of those things, like, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. During the pandemic, during the shutdown, I knew how far he was hitting and was thinking, oh, my God, this is going to change the game in 10 years. Then when he did the first 4 weeks back, I was like, edit, 5 years. And then when he won the PGA, or the U.S. Open, rather, I was like, this is going to change everything immediately. And to see the egos of guys like DJ and Rory posting ball speeds of 190, like, nobody's going to just sit back and let Bryson destroy them. Like, this is going to change the game. And I think for the better. I don't know that it'll be a more entertaining product to watch on TV, but it's not easy. People just think like, oh, I'll just throw on 40 pounds and hit it 50 yards further. What he's done is absolutely mind-boggling. Hats off to Bryson and his strength guy in Colorado and to Chris Como. The work they've done is mind-boggling how straight he's actually hitting the ball at that speed.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Scott, we're running out of time. How do you think Bryson's going to play at Augusta National?
I think he's going to destroy the place. People, the architecture crowd on Twitter got mad at Wingfoot saying he's not playing the course as it was designed, which I disagree with. Like, at Wingfoot, he just played it really, really well as designed. I do think that if he gets the 48-inch driver in play at Augusta and plays it like he can, he actually will make a mockery of the golf course and not be playing it as intended. It's going to be unbelievable to watch where he can hit it on every hole, essentially.
Yes, our very special guest this morning, founder of Decade Golf. Scott, where can our listeners go and find out more about your system?
PlayingLesson.com, not plural, PlayingLesson.com, or BirdieFire.com, or if you just Google Decade Golf at this point, I'm pretty easy to find. So it's all out there, and the app is designed for, it's not just for professionals. We've got a foundation app that's $99 for 6 months that teaches you all of this information over the course of 6 months. And it is exactly designed for players shooting between 75 and 90.
Well, we sincerely appreciate you dropping by. Continued success. And we got to have you back. We got to continue this conversation.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Scotty.
Thank you very much.